Welcome to the Minivate Gang podcast for Saturday, January 16th, 2010. I'm Steve Borsch, and on is the usual gang of colleagues, Phil Wilson.
Hello.
Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
Graham Thickens.
Greetings from balmy Bloomington.
And our very special guest, George Reese.
Hello.
How you doing, George?
I'm doing all right. How about you guys?
Good. And you are the founder of a couple of Minneapolis-based companies, Valtera and Stratus Networks, which is deeply involved in cloud computing and infrastructure. And what a great topic for today's podcast.
Yeah, baby.
It's, 2000,
I vote for that.
2010, or actually 2010, I guess, is the year of cloud computing, right?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, George, it seems like
we've been close to this. I worked at WAMNet back in the 90s, and we were doing cloud computing back then. So how has it changed in the last 10 years?
Well, a lot of, the old stodgy people will say there's nothing new about cloud computing. It's just essentially, network plus time sharing that we were doing back in the 70s. And the reality is that the technologies aren't anything new. It's just the economies of scale that we've reached that are new. I mean, and I think the newest technology involved is the web services APIs, which dates back, of course, to the right around the turn of the century time frame. But everything else is even, much older than that. But, what happened is Amazon came along with all this, not only excess capacity, but skill in terms of efficiently using that capacity to a degree that they could just turn it around and sell that to other people and make money off the excess capacity.
How come we haven't seen another company do like what Amazon has done? I mean, it just seems to make a lot of sense to sell your excess capacity.
Well, the reason being is that most companies that you would think of first off, that it was Amazon is probably a surprise, and not that it was IBM or SunGuard or somebody like that.
Yeah.
And the reason that those guys who you would think would be the natural players in the space, they really haven't traditionally made their money off of being efficient at the use of large scalable systems. I mean, in the case of Amazon, they have to keep their operations super cheap, or they can't make money off of their low margin scale. But with a managed service provider like an IBM or a SunGuard, that's not how they're operating. They're operating on a customer-by-customer basis, giving them essentially whatever they want to meet that customer's need without any idea or need or concern to make those operations efficient across their customers, other than the electricity issue. Electricity issue is the only thing that they've ever had any incentive to gain efficiencies on. And the result is that their core competency isn't about efficiency. It's about service.
Interesting. By the way, one thing Steve didn't mention in the introduction is George wrote a book published by O'Reilly that came out in April of last year, Cloud Computing Architectures, and he explains all this very well in a particularly good Chapter 1 overview. So everybody should go grab that.
And in the show notes, I'll put a link, because O'Reilly gives you a little peek at the first 30 pages.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, and that first 30 pages is definitely accessible to anybody. You don't have to be a techie.
Yes, yep. Exactly.
Yeah, it's a good management overview.
You talk about cumulonimbus and other sorts of clouds. Is that what?
Yeah.
Hey, only a company with a CEO, George's colleague, David Bagley from Oxford. He has a master's from Oxford. Could come up with a great name like Instratus. So, although it was a joint effort between the two of you, I'm sure, wasn't it, George?
Yeah, but he's the one who came up with that particular name.
Yes, he's got that great humanities background, you know, as well as quite a technology background.
I was just going to ask in terms of, you know, for all of our listeners, what is the state of cloud computing right now in terms of market size, growth, the dominant players? I mean, because obviously Google's now doing some things around the fringes, and Microsoft's in the game, and Amazon's in the game in a big way. And as you mentioned, is the leader. So kind of what's the state of the industry right now?
Well, a lot of times I compare the cloud computing revolution to the internet revolution in terms of, you know, maturity development. So, and it seems to me that in terms of and I do that because it's a revolution on the scale of the internet revolution in terms of impact on culture and business, in particular business. But it seems to me cloud computing is being adopted a lot faster than the internet was, and you know, on the order of two internet years for every one cloud computing year. So 2009 was essentially 1996 and 1997. And so 2010 is going to be 98 and 99. And if you remember that, you know, 96, sure. 97 was the year people had discovered it. You know, as 96 rolled in, everybody knew what the internet was, but not everybody was using it, and nobody really had a clue how to apply it to themselves. And by the time 97 got around, it was at the end of being a leading edge technology and on the cusp of being adopted. So 2010 is really going to be the year that you start seeing more of the mainstream adoption of cloud computing and internalizing it into the business.
Yeah, and in particular, George, when we talk about other players, I would love your reaction to the news that we were tweeting a few days ago about Microsoft and HP joining forces in what a $275 million sort of joint effort, which partially involves the promotion of the Microsoft Azure platform, correct? And maybe you want to talk about platform as a service, you know, versus infrastructure as a service, which we've already kind of touched on.
Platform as a service being that an organization essentially provides you with the basic operating system and APIs on which you can just dump your application and forget about it. Great for rapid deployment of systems. Great for if you don't have system administrators. It's got, but you've got a lot less control over the infrastructure. Meeting compliance in a platform cloud is very difficult, and there are numerous security concerns associated with that. Infrastructure as a service is where allocate your own infrastructure, virtual infrastructure, though. So I, you know, go into a console, say I want 10 servers, and there they are. And it's up to me to, you know, manage the operating system and deploy my applications in there. Downside is I have to have system administrators and I have greater control, which is, you know, two sides of the same sword. On the one side, you have to have the talent to control it. On the other side is you control it. So you can do what you need for your infrastructure, such as deal with compliance issues, manage your security concerns.
And there are less lock-in concerns with infrastructure as a service than there is with platform as a service. Right?
Yeah, that's a very good point, and it's a really critical point too.
Can I just interject? Can you differentiate? I know that you're not a fan of platform as a service as a tagline, but mm-hmm. can you differentiate between the two? And I have a follow up question with virtualization.
Well, the quintessential platform as a service options are Salesforce's Force.com platform and Google App Engine's platform. So Google App Engine provides a fabric in which you can run your applications. And really the key difference is practically speaking, is that with platform as a service, you have to write to a specific API. So that means that's the lock-in component to it. So you can't necessarily take that application and deploy it very easily or at all with another vendor. So, for example, you can't take a force.com application and stick it over in Azure. So the key thing is that you've got this sort of API-based lock-in, whereas with the infrastructure, it's like you're building out your own data center with infrastructure as a service, except instead of physical things that you're building it out with, you're doing it all with virtual servers and virtual disks and virtual firewalls in somebody else's infrastructure.
Well, one of the things that I've been looking at as a trend and I'm personally pretty excited about and interested in are virtualization offerings like Jumpbox. And I know there are some open source ones as well, where you have pre-configured software applications that are all packaged up in an environment. So if it's a WordPress Jumpbox, or it's a Drupal or a Joomla or a Deki Wiki or, you know, whatever it happens to be, that it's an optimized environment that you can replicate.
I think those are great tools, and those are sort of don't fit well in either paradigm.
That's what I was going to ask you was how do they fit? And, because as a business, from a business perspective, it looks really attractive to be able to clone and replicate those environments. So if you need, 10 instances of WordPress, you can just, immediately develop those. And with CPU speeds and RAM getting less expensive over time, that, in theory, you're not going to have that much of a performance hit. But where does it fit between those two?
It is sort of a platform as a service offering to you, whereas to the vendor, it's probably a bit of an infrastructure as a service offering. And I distinguish it a little bit from the issues of inherent in platform as a service, because, when you're talking about, say, deploying on a content management system, you're talking about a very, you're talking more about a packaged bit of software that's being deployed for you. So at some level, it's even further up the stack as software as a service. It actually has elements of all three models, not just the infrastructure or the platform or the software as a service model. The key thing is that, when they're along the lines of, very point service options where it's not about the code, it's about the data, like with, say, a WordPress type solution, as long as you can get that data out of that offering, then a lot of the issues that I bring up around platform as a service don't apply. The problem with platform as a service is what you're sticking out there is code, often, Python code or Java code or .NET code that, in the event of the underlying provider would need to be deployed somewhere else. And so how do you, let's say Salesforce goes poof, what do you do with all of that Apex code? You can't take it anywhere else. And whereas in the WordPress situation, ostensibly you've got backups of your web content. You may have some logic in there, but it's not, it's something that you could convert easily to a competing platform were they to go out of business. It's much different when you're dealing with data. That's why Salesforce.com and software as a service does so well, because we are talking about data. Now, a lot of times customers, when they're at the software as a service level, forget about the disaster recovery issue and aren't making backups of their data, but that's their fault, not the provider's fault.
And that's probably rampant.
I would venture that it's the rule rather than the exception, unfortunately.
Well, exactly. Also, Tim and I, and Phil too, were on Media Temple. And Media Temple at one point had a holistic backup service that they were going to be releasing, and they never did. And I'm assuming it's a incredible resource and management issue to try to do holistic backups of all the organizations that are on your infrastructure.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That'd be just a nightmare.
You know, cross cloud operations is the biggest challenge in building out a pure cloud IT infrastructure.
Can you talk about Instratus? I know, but for the listeners too, is what is Instratus and what are cloud infrastructure management tools and what do they do? Okay.
Well, you've got this infrastructure as a service layer where you've got the ability to, you know, on-demand request servers and firewalls and content distribution, network distributions and disk drives and a whole bunch of other, virtual hardware resources. And, the people who provide them, like Amazon Web Services, Rackspace Cloud, local company here, Visy, has a service called ReliaCloud. They all have web consoles and APIs that you can write stuff to launch servers and shut them down. But, first of all, they're all different. So if you want to operate across cloud, you have to learn different tools. And then the second problem that they have is that they just manage the resources directly. They don't provide a bigger picture view of your infrastructure. So a cloud management tool like Instratus, and another tool, a term that people are often using these days is the term cloud broker. Provides a single interface through which you control a multi-cloud infrastructure as a service infrastructure. I apologize for using infrastructure twice in the same sentence. So you can go in through a console and, shut down, add servers, but you also get stuff like monitoring of those servers so that when they fail, regardless of whether the underlying cloud provider is aware of the failure, you'll know about the failure. They will help you operate across cloud, so you get the same interface for ReliaCloud as you do Amazon Web Services.
Really? Okay.
And the ability to operate across the two.
So you can create your own redundancy.
Yeah. The biggest use for the cross cloud concept today is disaster recovery, okay. Having your operations in one cloud and backing up to a secondary cloud.
And you guys can do that now, George?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Your customers can? Yeah. I was going to say, how many cloud providers have you announced support for now? I know you're continually adding more, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So we're in production with Amazon, Rackspace, ReliaCloud, Azure, and I think that's for Roll Terra Cloud Express at the end of January, and sometime in the near future we're going to have Cloud Central out of Australia, and
Go Oz.
Go for it. Yeah.
You were down in Oz in the summer, weren't you? You were down at Cloud Camp Sydney.
Yeah,
right?
and in Auckland as well. We actually have some decent relationships with the people doing cloud stuff in Australia, New Zealand, including your friend Ben Keeps.
Yes.
So we're working with those friendships we put together to help serve that market.
Well, that's awesome. You know, the other thing you could do, George, for the listeners is give a little background on how Instratus came about. It's a great story how it grew out of Valtera. Tell us about that.
Well, it's totally a story of scratching your own itch. Valtera is a content management platform for enterprise web content management that's been around since 2003. We have a whole suite of features in the Valterra platform aimed at the marketing function. So we're really good at websites that have a marketing focus as opposed to an IT focus. And, the thing that we were thinking about in 2007 is how do we make this business scale more rapidly? And the answer we came up with is we need to make, split out these components that make up the Valterra platform and make them available on demand. So, we developed on-demand landing page solution. So you come in, sign up, and you can start building landing pages tied into Google Analytics and Google Website Optimizer, a personalization widget so you can stick personalized content onto your website, manage it through the Valterra platform, and get stuff that's personalized on very complex rules with very fast response, and then a couple other things. And the issue with that is that that environment requires 24/7, 365 operation, and our infrastructure was geared up to providing custom SLAs on a per client basis in the past. And so the customers would pay for whatever infrastructure was appropriate to whatever SLA they desired. The typical problem I mentioned that the IBMs and SendGuards had, that's the same thing IBM and SendGuard has. If you don't care about your SLAs, you can have them host a single server out there. And if you want high availability, they'll stick, a bunch of servers out there, but, efficiency isn't part of the deal there. And to do an on-demand service, you really need to, you've got a customer that's paying $99 a month. They're still expecting 24/7, 365. So we looked at building out a high availability infrastructure for the Valterra on-demand solution. It was going to cost us $100,000 plus to put that together. So we looked at the alternatives and came upon Amazon Web Services as an alternative. And we started to, play around to see if it would work. And I think that's one of the most interesting things about cloud computing right there is that before we knew it was going to work, we could sit and play with it and try to figure out whether it was going to work without incurring awful costs. If it hadn't worked out, we would not be stuck with, six figures worth of hardware that we didn't need. No. But it turns out it did work, but we needed to have some tools around it to manage that infrastructure. You just can't launch servers out there in the cloud and hope that they continue working. And we needed a mechanism automating deployment of these servers because we wanted it to scale, significantly for Valterra. So we built out the tools, and then, 6 months after we had started building out the tools and we had Valterra running in the cloud, we had people we were talking to ask us, hey, I'm interested in those tools you've got for deploying in the cloud, because we've looked at the cloud. We determined we couldn't do it because it required too much handholding. So we, helped people with one or two clients at first use the tools. And then we said, hey, we should spin this off as a separate company. And that became Instratus. Officially, first paid customer was the summer of 2008 and been public about ourselves for about a year now.
Yeah, and I was going to say some of those early customers, it's probably pretty well known that Carlson Marketing was one of your early customers,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They were the first paid customer.
And, of course, they serve many big Fortune 500 companies in their clientele. We had them on our panel at the Minnesota High Tech Association last spring, I recall. And so maybe this would be a good time to get into talking about conferences. Huh? I know you have one coming up that you definitely would love to talk about, another Cloud Camp, the second annual Cloud Camp MSP, right?
That's right. Yeah, last year's was a really big success. It turned out, you know, we had scheduled it for the middle of April last year, and it turns out that, you know, and it was on a Saturday, and it turns out that it was on the first nice weekend of the spring. Yet about 100 to 110 people ended up showing up anyway. And I said to myself, if I weren't the organizer of this thing, I wouldn't be here. but it really was very powerful event in terms of translating what cloud computing means to Minnesota. Had a lot of unique tracks in that cloud camp compared to other cloud camps, especially things like how cloud computing can benefit rural Minnesota and stuff like that. And so, the time has come to have our second one. And based on last year's experience, I'm having it a little bit earlier in the year. So it's going to be the first week of March. So no chance of a 70 degree day. And we're going to hold it in the evening at the Microsoft campus.
Here in Bloomington.
I'll put a link in the show notes to the Eventbrite registration. Okay. I have a question. Go ahead. Go ahead, Greg.
I was going to say the Eventbrite is open already, huh?
That's right. Yep.
Good.
Yep.
That's
at cloudcamp.org/Minneapolis.
I know you just secured the venue not too long ago, so this is fairly recent info here.
Yeah, I believe it was yesterday.
So. Oh, there you go.
Okay. Well, the power of Google, yeah, I found it.
Microsoft's been very generous to cloud camps and sponsoring them and providing venues across the country. So we're lucky to have them on board helping us.
Well, and I remember you had the Azure evangelist speak last year. You attracted a lot of national folks to come to last year's event, which was at the Computer Science Building at the U. And I remember, who was there? Rightscale and, Maso, the founder of Maso was there. I chatted
Server,
with him.
Yeah. Server, several others. And I apologize that I can't name them off the top of my head, but yeah, we had a very good mix of local sponsors and national sponsors, and it's looking like it's going to be that way again this year.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and you've already secured at least one sponsor locally here, have you not?
That's right, ReliaCloud, which, you know, Visy was our platinum sponsor last year, and so ReliaCloud is really a continuation of that, reflecting how, you know, their cloud strategy is evolving. You know, now they've got this ReliaCloud cloud service offering, and I didn't even have to ask them to be a platinum sponsor. They've been really great to this effort of doing a cloud camp in Minneapolis.
Yeah, and I know Jason Baker spoke last year, the CTO of Visy, and he's a very well-spoken guy on this topic.
Yeah, and certainly this year, they should have some really interesting stuff to say, because, you know, last year there was no ReliaCloud. This year, they've got ReliaCloud. It's up. It's real. And Stratus works with ReliaCloud, and, they've got some battle stories to tell this year about what they've done and about setting up a public cloud, a regional public cloud.
Sure. So you're still putting the program together probably for Cloud Camp as far as speakers and panels and that sort of thing.
Well, it is an unconference, so that means
that's true.
I don't have to put together a lot of it, but you know, there is the lightning talk speaker, so there will somebody from Instratus, somebody from ReliaCloud, somebody from Azure. We're talking to a couple of others who might be engaged in the lightning cloud sponsorship. But then once that lightning talk time is done with, it's all up to the attendees. So the panel is up to the attendees, and the sessions that follow are all up to the attendees.
Yeah, well,
one of the questions I've got, George, and this is, it's coming at me from all kinds of different places. And the most bizarre one was getting a Roku box yesterday and being able to use codes to connect up to all of these different video related services and photo related services that are online. You know, I mean, everything from Flickr and Facebook, to some new one called Frame Channel that I had never heard of before. And the question I've got is related to the trend in APIs and the sorts of things that maybe Instratus does with helping any organization that does in fact have an API for their web services to be able to manage them and to be able to analyze what's happening. And is that a big trend yet? I mean, I've been kind of watching programmable web and how many mashups they put down and how many APIs yeah. they put down, you know, things like that. But I'm not really connected to that. And I'm wondering what you're seeing.
I would say
right now
the cloud has API diarrhea.
Okay. Got it.
Everybody has their own API, and though they may be doing the same thing, it varies. They'll still vary in annoying and meaningful way. I mean, annoying, but critical ways.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So what are you seeing that's needed? I mean, an acceleration in standards or?
So one of the things I've done from the cloud perspective is, you know, I've released as an open source project something called Dasein Cloud, which is an abstraction layer on top of all of the infrastructure as a service, web service interfaces. So if you're writing Java program, you can just write to Dasein Cloud and compile your application once, and it will work against any cloud that Dasein Cloud supports.
How do you spell that?
Dasein, and it's dasein-cloud.sourceforge.net.
Got it.
And that helps for Java, obviously. My concern is about abstracting at the Java layer. Now there are efforts like Delta Cloud and a couple others that I can't think of off the top of my head to sort of unify. Well, then there's OCCI as well to create a unified web service for describing cloud computing services. But we're still a bit of a ways away from that right now. We're still in the heavy innovation phase of infrastructure as a service. And when you're in that phase, the people who are innovating are afraid of standards that don't perfectly describe what they do. Now, in 2010, as we start to see the widespread adoption, you know, the 1998 and 1999, just sheer mass is going to drive people towards a more standardized way of describing these things, and we'll see how that turns out.
and then you'd be able to potentially add a layer of analytics and management to Instratus.
I mean, we do have a layer of analytics and management, but not for managing API interaction.
Right.
Our analytics and monitoring inside Instratus are all about assuming that the API is lying about everything and trying to figure out what's going on itself. and that's really Instratus's value proposition, with respect to the other cloud management tools is that, you know, we're built on the idea that your cloud provider is essentially mildly hostile to you, so that we assume the API is lying. We assume that they won't notify you about third-party subpoenas and just hand over your data. So, you know, we're monitoring the cloud, keeping it honest for you is really what we're about, and then implementing your IT policies and procedures in cloud.
I like that.
That's
honesty,
very important
broker,
stuff.
Huh?
yeah.
Well, especially now with everything that's going on with even the Google China thing, which is another question. You know, some bloggers I've been reading are talking about that this was a veiled attempt by Google to ensure that people don't think the cloud is untrustworthy. And I'm wondering what you think about that whole situation.
Well, you know, I think that when you find that any entity has been hostile to you to the degree of conducting espionage like that and undermining your value proposition, you have to take public action on that.
Yeah.
Now, it's made easier for them to do that by the fact that they aren't winning in China. But, there's nothing that, a billion people with rapidly growing incomes has a way of enabling people to rationalize just about anything. Having said that, you know, it was becoming increasingly clear that Google was going to have to compete in a way that, you know, they've never had to compete before in any other market when it came to China. And given that, this was an attack on them, there's no other way you can describe it. And you have to fight back when you're attacked like that. And this is an appropriate mechanism for fighting back. So I only think it had to do with the idea of trust in the cloud insofar as the nature of the attack was such that it undermined the very value proposition of Google. So they needed to take this to maintain what their value proposition is.
Right, right.
So I just wanted to jump in and kind of change subjects slightly and ask about, 2010 seems to be the year of mobile computing, and we've got this Apple tablet coming out in a couple of weeks. How do you think the cloud is going to be impacted by all this?
Allegedly coming out.
No, Tim's plugged in. Come on.
It's a tech meme says it's definite. It's a lock. They're making them in production right now.
I'm sure it'd make it more interesting.
Steve Jobs loves you. That's all there is to it.
I think he loves Steve a little bit more. Steve Borsch, that is.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'd make it a little more interesting if I were to come out here and deny that I think that the devil is coming out and argue about that. But I can't bring myself to do that. But what I can say is that the whatever the tablet is, and the most interesting thing about the tablet is that I can't conceive of a use for the tablet. But
I'm with you, George. But I'm with you.
I'm also more willing to bet that if Steve Jobs has put his blessing on it, he must have found a way that I just can't conceive, that it's a limit in my ability to conceive and not an actual problem with the tablet if he's put his blessing on it. Now, he can make a mistake, and maybe he's making a big one here, but I'm going to bet on him and not me in this case.
Yeah, yeah. He was the guy behind the Lisa and the Apple III, after all.
Yeah, that's true.
He was in on that.
There's a really big need for a giant iPod Touch because there are a lot of big pockets out there.
Cargo pants, baby. cargo pant pockets.
The interesting thing about whatever the isolated tablet turns out to be is that, specifically as it relates to this conversation, is that it matters a lot, how it ties into cloud computing. And if I were to pick a space that I think Apple has been particularly bad with, it is cloud computing. As a matter of fact, I can't think of a cloud computing success story in the Apple arsenal.
Well, wait a minute.
You can sync your
iTunes is not a cloud computing system. It violates just about everything. It's just that I consider
really
cloud. Yeah, I mean, first off, you have to have iTunes itself to use it. It is not a ubiquitous protocol. If you don't have iTunes, you don't use it. Part of cloud definition is this idea of ubiquity and the ability to use it from anywhere in any device, and that just isn't the case. You have to install software, and from my definition, a lot of definitions of cloud computing, if you have to install custom software, then it isn't a cloud. And Apple, doesn't get that. And,
consider Mobile Me to be a cloud solution?
Oh, no, Mobile Me is a cloud solution. It's just a god-awful one.
Yeah,
that hasn't had a lot of adoption.
Yeah,
it's locked into the Apple infrastructure. It's not open to anybody else.
That's right. And you know, you can use it from, I guess I haven't tried it from Internet Explorer, but I suppose you could use it from Internet Explorer. You know, but, you know, you're paying more money for, you're paying money, first of all, for most services that are free from other cloud providers. And the service that you get from it is not as good as the stuff you're getting from free cloud providers in general. I mean, about the most useful service is the locate my iPhone thing. And we use that every day, don't we?
Yeah, right. If that's the best they have, you know, they do have problems. Yeah.
So Apple just hasn't figured out, you know, the cloud computing space. And I had actually tweeted the other day about it. You know, I think this, the Google Nexus One, as good or as bad or whatever is it is. And I don't know. I haven't seen one or anything. If yeah, I've heard great things about it, but it is totally the wrong thing for Google to be doing, in my opinion, because Google is not good at user experience and design. They're good at cloud. And so the real nirvana is Apple collaborating with Google to create solutions that combine the tools you're using with the cloud. And now that we've got, and we had that up until the last year, and the world was all a happy place. And, you know, starting in this last year, we have them competing, and we're going to see some really weird things with Google doing things they shouldn't be doing and Apple doing things they shouldn't be doing. And, you know, that worries me.
Like, well, don't you think they have to do this, though, because Apple would not cede the advertising space on the handheld with the iPhone to Google? So Google, as a strategic move, has to create their own mobile OS.
You know, I don't know that that's, I mean, Google's never had control over any of the operating systems or hardware platforms in the past, and they've managed to find ways to monetize the advertising associated with this. This is a platform that has been out a very short period of time, so for them to, you know, for them to have pulled up stakes and say, you know, we can't compete on this platform, you know, seems a bit odd now. And I'd say, you know, Apple's going to have to open up that platform too. You know, they can't keep this control over this platform, because if it's not the Nexus One or the Android, it's going to be somebody who's going to have an open platform that, that is appealing to consumers. And that will be the end of the iPhone.
I don't know if they have to do that, though. I think that as long as Steve Jobs and Apple keeps making a dead sexy product that really outperforms so many other things, that they, I mean, I still think they've got quite a while before they have to even think about opening up that platform. I just still think it serves them to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you a little bit, but I mean, I think the time frame's only about a year. I don't think so.
They've built up such a cult of personality of being a closed and very secretive group and still, you know, marshaling an incredible fan base. I just can't see them changing dramatically.
But the thing that they need to look at is how many of the people praising Nexus One right now are Apple fanboys. There are way too many of them, and they need to pay attention to that.
Yeah, but they still only sold a drop in the bucket number of Nexus phones.
And that's why I'm not saying the Nexus One is the thing. It's not going to be the one that ends it, but there is going to be something that is going to force the hand of openness upon Apple. I mean, you know, keeping the platform closed too long was what hurt Apple, you know, the Mac the first time around at the end of the 80s. Mm-hmm. And if they keep the, you know, if they keep the clamps down on the iPhone too long, you know, in the 2010s, they'll suffer the same fate. And it's going to be a lot shorter time that they can keep control over that, because we're in an era of openness. At least in the 80s, you know, Apple was living in the era of closed systems.
Well, and one of the things that I look at, you know, last summer's announcement that Apple was going to be building a $1 billion data center in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And if I scroll through the pages on my own iPhone, I look at the fact that these apps are either tying into APIs or they're tying into RSS feeds from news organizations or, you know, yada yada yada. I mean, there's all it. I mean, it's worthless as a device unless I can connect to the cloud.
That's right.
And the one thing that I'm really, because I haven't yet formed an opinion, but I'm listening to you, George, talk about opening up the device, and Tim, you're a huge devotee of Google doing the same thing and versus the iPhone. And I'm trying to yet be a little pragmatic because I think too that it has to be open, and yet the magic sauce for Apple making a paradigm shift in the music business was not just the device, the iPod. It was the entire value chain. Yeah. It was, you know, we had all this digital music and we wanted to manage it with, and iTunes was there to allow us to do that. And oh, by the way, we could also get stuff online. And then it ended up on this device, and that was inserted into an industry that was basically having their lifeblood stolen out from underneath them. So it was kind of the perfect storm of all of this. So it's not just the iPhone. It's got to be the connection to the cloud. But the frustration that I feel, that I know you guys probably do as well, is it's not moving fast enough. I mean, there are things that I want to be able to do that the apps aren't out. They are if I want to jailbreak the thing.
Well, I think there's two things. I think there's the applications themselves, and then there's the whole user experience. And Apple has really perfected the user experience, and it's great. But Android is, from an applications perspective, a really great platform. I mean, they have, you know, built-in turn-by-turn GPS navigation directly into it now, where it's just as good as any GPS that you're going to buy, and it's included for free on your phone. Every Android phone comes with it. So I think it's going to be interesting to watch this, how important really is user experience versus the kind of applications that you and I want, Steve.
Yeah.
Well, you know, here's the deal. I think we should stop talking about Apple, because during my first conversation about Apple, my computer froze up solid and lost it. So I think they're listening. So
I'd add one more thing, though, is that, you know, with respect to the music industry, the thing that Apple did to the music industry is they opened it up. So, yeah, you know, yeah, we talk about all this closed versus open, and the thing that made them the success here is the opening up of the music industry, giving people a viable mechanism to be legal about the music that they're having.
Yeah, well, maybe so they're about to do the same thing with video too, and with books, yeah, with this mythical tablet.
Yep.
So I'm telling you, stop talking about them. Stop talking about it. You're going to kill my computer.
Okay.
Well, George, is Valtera still in business? Are you still running that company as well?
Oh, it's still definitely in business. So I'm not engaged on a day-to-day basis with it. I still, you know, own an ownership share in it, but that's the extent of my involvement.
George and I actually first met back in, gosh, it had to be like 2005 when I was at CBS and I'm sure he remembers me as a pain in the ass client. but I can tell you, George, that you know, when I, shortly after I left CBS, that's they took that site down and went back to a corporate site, and I still think it was one of the best sites that had been built for an AC radio station, an adult contemporary radio station. I think it was so much better than what's out there right now. You know, the skyline with the zooming artists going over the top. So I know I didn't know a lot about it then, but I know a lot more about it now. And that was a good piece of product. So,
well, thank you very much. I'm, you know, obviously it was mostly my team, and you know, I'm very proud of the team.
Well, that's not true. You were actually there at the brainstorming and the stuff. So you were very hands on that. So I thought it was a well done. You know, looking back, much better. I think it was a really well done site.
Well, thanks.
And I was going to say, George, you have a lot of big companies using that platform. Rattle off a few.
Oh, like, yeah. Let's see who, you know, I can name.
Some you can't. Right. Yeah.
But, you know, we definitely have a lot. Well, I mean, you know, one I know is public and it'll be, you know, familiar to everybody in this audience is Caribou Coffee. Caribou Coffee uses the full extent of the Valterra platform to, you know, for, you know, so all of the features from it end to end. Let's see, another good, well, that's probably the biggest one, and without me having to go through, can I talk about him or can't I?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, but the fact remains the company is very well established and profitable and you're co-based in Stratuses with Valterra in downtown Minneapolis.
Right? Yeah, that's right. Actually, profits from Valterra are what funded the bootstrapping of InStratus. Mm. Now, you know, on a day-to-day basis, I'm doing the direction and guidance for InStratus these days, because we have a good team over at Valterra, that's why I don't need to be involved on a day-to-day basis with Valterra.
Right, right. Well, and switching gears a little bit here, as I know we're probably nearing our 1 hour, you have another, not a related company at all, but they share your space downtown that I wanted to touch on, and this is Alvenda, right?
Yeah, they're actually both a Valterra and an InStratus client. They're a startup, and it's looking like actually part of what our offices are doing is helping do some incubation of startups in the local area. So yeah, you know, Alvenda, probably the way I would describe them, and maybe they'd cringe a little bit if they heard this description, but is essentially the ability to do e-commerce straight in the ads that you're serving. So, you know, you're a company, you want to grab the e-commerce transaction straight from an ad rather than lead them to a landing page and through a sales process. Alvenda enables you to do that. So you like that because it's fewer clicks from the advertiser's perspective. The people selling the ad space, say the MSNBCs of the world love it because they don't lose the eyeball during the e-commerce transaction.
Mm-hmm. So they use the InStratus management tools in running their solution in the cloud, huh?
Oh, that's right. I mean, the security is, you know, as an e-commerce solution is absolutely critical to them. And, for them being able to have something that's taking care of the security and the compliance issues, because obviously being in e-commerce, they've got significant compliance issues, is absolutely critical.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, the big news for Alvenda, which I suppose we can mention here, is that they apparently bagged $5 million in VC from Split Rock Partners here. And I hear that, did I hear that Jamie Thingelstad has been put in there as CTO?
He's in there as CTO. I don't know what other elements I'm able to comment on or not.
Well, I'm just going by what I hear. I've seen no news release, but yeah, it's a done deal from what I've heard. So,
well, just consider it the Apple tablet type rumor, right?
Yeah, right.
We all know it's coming, but
the alleged addition of Jamie Thingelstad.
That's right. There we go.
I said, I can confirm Jamie is on board with the organization, okay. And all he right. has been, I think, for about a month, maybe even longer. I don't know, maybe less than that. The days seem to blur by right now. I had the busiest Christmas week I've had in my professional life, so I'm everything's a blur to me these days.
Well, that's a good thing.
And was that busy with InStratus, or you mean just the hubbub around your offices there, Alvenda?
So all three organizations right now are in the middle of hiring people. So Alvenda, InStratus, and Valterra are all trying to hire people, and I have to fight with the Valterra guys over who gets which new hire.
Are you primarily hiring developers, the three firms?
I think Alvenda's hiring everything, to be honest.
With $5 million, they probably would be.
But we're primarily hiring front end and back end developers.
Okay.
So both. Java types on the back end. You know, we may have some need for .NET type in the near future, and Java heavy, you know, Web 2.0 AJAX types on the front end type stuff.
And that, is that true for both Valtera and in Stratus?
It's the balance is true for Instratus. Valtera is more the front end type.
Okay, sure, that makes sense. Yeah.
Well, I have one last.
Lots of big news.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just have one last quick question, and I'm wondering about either positive or negative any impact from apps.gov. And for those that don't know about it, it's essentially the GSA, the Government Services Administration's service to expose approved open source and other cloud computing apps to the government.
You know, apps.gov itself hasn't had much of an impact yet, or maybe it has, and I don't know it, but I mean, there's definitely for us, and I can't go into a lot of details around this, but there's definitely an impact of the government and its focus on cloud on us as an organization.
Okay. Well, we'll take that with a grain of salt. I'll call my buddies over at the NSA and have a chat with them and see what's going on, see what they know. Just kidding. Yeah. Just kidding. If NSA is listening, I don't know anyone there.
They're always listening, baby.
They're always listening. That's right. Parsing
don't
keywords.
Don't freeze up my computer again.
Yeah. Shush. That's right. Yeah, like we're a big threat.
Working on behalf of Steve Jobs.
That's right. Oh, my gosh. Well, listen, this has been, George, this has been so great. Thanks carving out the time on a Saturday morning to chat about this. And I'll put all kinds of stuff in the show notes so people can get linked to your books and your sites and your just everything.
Well, thanks a lot for having me here this morning.
It was great, George. Really appreciate it. And say hi to David and the boys, and onward and upward to a great 2010.
Yeah, yeah. For you guys, too.
All righty.
Well, thank you very
much. Thanks much. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.